Hi, my name is Claire and I'm the mother of three teenagers with FASD.
I'm Jessica, a PhD researcher specialising in educational interventions for children with FASD.
And together we are the hosts of Spotlight on FASD, the UK's first podcast dedicated to shining a spotlight on fetal alcohol spectrum disorders.
FASD is a condition caused by prenatal alcohol exposure that affects hundreds of thousands of children across the UK.
And we're here to bring these conversations out of the shadows and make sure that no one living with FASD feels alone.
Hi everyone and welcome back to another episode of Spotlight on FASD. This week we are very, very pleased to be joined by Gilbert, who is a PhD student from the University of Salford. You will have heard us speak to some of his colleagues from the University of Salford before. They're doing a lot of research around FASD. And Gilbert, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Hello, Jessica. Hello, Claire. Thank you so much for having me. Honor to speak to you. I really thank you for giving me the opportunity to just share my research this morning.
Yeah, no, we're really excited to have you in this. It ties in very, very nicely to the mini series we've been doing on criminal justice with Dr. Gerard Brown. So I've kind of given a little bit of a clue there as to what Gilbert's research is in. But do you want to just very briefly introduce your study, like what it is that you're working on?
Yeah, sure. Thank you, Jessica. My study is actually focused on FASD and the justice system. And I mean, the formal title is Exploring the Factors That Predispose Individuals with FASD to Encounters with the Criminal Justice System. The idea in this is to actually, firstly, interview parents and young people who have FASD, who have encountered the justice system, to firstly explore their experiences, their perceptions of the factors that predispose them to encounters with the justice system. That particular element forms the first part of the studies. And the second bit is where we would be undertaking, or we are currently undertaking, psychological assessment. It has a bit of forensics to it, where we are assessing the interrogative suggestibility of these young people who have FASD. We're also assessing their memories, their IQs, and their impulsivities. And we would be comparing this to the results we get from neurotypical population. So it is more of a quantitative design for the first, for the second study, than for the first is qualitative, really. Yeah.
So it's something that it's really, as a parent of teenagers with FASD, we are going to ask you this. We always talk about what brought us into the world of FASD and what got us hooked. And when before I even knew what FASD was, certainly before I knew that my children had FASD, a statistic that pulled me into what has become a vocation, really. It's become my mission in life. I was just very casually given a statistic on an attachment training course about the stats back then, over a decade ago, around male children who have been who have touched the care system at any point entering the judicial system, and 2 out of 3 of my children were boys. And I can remember the feeling on that day when it was being said, because I was thinking, this directly impacts me and this directly impacts my sons. I know the statistic is even higher when FASD is at play, but this was just children who touched the care system. And that's what fueled me, that small percentage that I have of keeping my children out of the judicial system is what has fueled me for the past 15 solid years, every single day. So this is something that is fascinating for me, the work that you are doing, because it's something that directly, it's a piece of research that directly impacts every single person involved with anyone who is touched by FASD. And as we know, that's a lot of people, and that's pretty much everyone at some point will be involved with someone with FASD. So it's really, I'm really looking forward to the outcome of this and to see what you come up with.
Thank you, Claire. Thank you. I think if for anyone who is involved in FASD, and if you sort of either experientially or by means of research, you would really know that it's quite a crucial, you know, topic, especially when we speak to parents, when you talk to carers. It feels like it's just the central point of concern for each and every one of them, both for those who have young children who have not, you know, encountered the justice system yet, or for those who really have teenagers within their, you know, age bracket of being criminally responsible. So yes, I get what you are saying, and we also look forward to the impact these studies will really create.
Mm-hmm. And I think as well, I think it's a lot of people might think like, oh, this is a scary topic, this isn't a very nice topic, and we pride ourselves on being very positive and picking out all the positive aspects. However, the way that I look at it is, I had a tiny bit of information available to me over a decade ago. It basically a statistic. I didn't know what fed into it. I learned that the crux of it was children would become disengaged with education, and then they would filter into the judicial system. So I knew that those were likely to happen, so I had to put all of my efforts into stopping that from happening. And actually, I'm looking for some wood to touch. The ages that my children are, typically with children with FASD, there would have been a lot more touches with the judicial system than they had. Right. And we've had a very, very tiny, very positive incidents, a couple of them, and that is 100% because I just had a little bit of knowledge that this was very likely to happen, so I had to be mindful of it. So this, to me, if we can come up with this information, this is it's kind of like handing a little bit of a manual to someone and saying, you know, this is what could happen. However, if we these things, the chances of that happening are so much more slim. And so to me, it's everything about it's positive. It is literally a good news story. That's the way I look at it, because, you know, I just know what I was capable of doing on just having a little bit of an idea that it could happen. But when you understand what can make it happen, what the factors that play into it, and you're able to address those things early on, it saves lives, it changes lives, and again feeds into changing our society. So it's powerful stuff, and I'm really, really thankful that you're doing it.
Oh, thank you, Claire. Thank you so much.
So, Gilbert, please share with us why FASD? What got you sucked in? At what point did you think, this is where my research is going to focus, this is the condition?
When you use the word stalk, I mean, I've listened to a lot of your podcasts, and I'm like, I think that word just cuts it. You just get stuck. I think it relates back to my experience back in West Africa, Nigeria precisely. My first degree originally was in biochemistry, and after my first degree, I had the opportunity, I had the privilege of working as a pharmaceutical representative for a pharmaceutical company called Roche. We did work with some of the third-party agents, and at the time, I was in charge of oncology drugs, that's drugs that for cancer patients, basically, and virology drugs too as well. And I think the greatest learnings I had from those from that experience or from handling these franchises was, you know, the link between having a correct diagnosis, having the correct treatment options, and the positive outcomes for patients. Now, with this, you know, background, I came over. I had a scholarship to come for a master's in public health, the University of Salford. And at the time, while I was looking for a research project to undertake for my MSc, I sort of started going through, you know, the school's list of available projects, because I thought, well, that would be a good place to start. And all of a sudden, I came across the research carried out by Penny. This was, I think, 2018 or so thereabout. But you know, what struck me was the fact that after all the whole introduction, it was mentioned there that, well, FASD, you know, a lot of people with FASD experience misdiagnosis and underdiagnosis. And I'm like, oh my God, you know, that is just where it started for me. That's where the fire got lit. And I think I've never stopped, because immediately I decided, based on my experience, I just knew, well, look, this is something worth researching. I want to, you know, give the rest of my research career to really doing this. And it started off with my master's studies, because at the time I did research with social workers, where I explored the experiences working with these children. And this was completed. Thankfully, the paper was published last year. Then I decided, right before the MSc was over, I decided, well, I'm going to do a PhD. And this time around, based on what I've studied, based on the literature reviews I've carried out, then the criminal justice system is really where my interest lies. And I've never stopped, really. I've never stopped. You just get stopped, don't you? How do you stop in a field like this, Jessica? I can't believe anybody. Go on, yeah?
There's nobody I've ever spoken to who ends up in this field who didn't kind of accidentally stumble into it, and then it consumes you because it's so fascinating. And I think you can't look at it properly without being led directly to the judicial system, because it is a funnel to the judicial system. And it's something that it was just a few months ago, it might have changed briefly, but on our gov.uk website, our government admits to the fact that 30% of our prison population is people who have experienced care at some point. So if they're admitting to 30%, then you can bet your bottom dollar that there are more than 30% in there. We then know the prevalence of the FASD community within that factor of people. So it is, this has got, if we can address this, if we can start and turn the tide on this, then it can change what our entire judicial system looks like. And obviously the crux of it all is people's lives, the fact that there are so many people in prison with brain injury that nobody is aware of. But also, you know, when it comes to the nitty-gritty of it all, everything boils down to money and budgets. Yeah. And if we are addressing this properly, it will save our country billions and billions and billions of pounds by people not entering through. Because once you're in the judicial system for any length of time, then the chances of you just going round and round in that loop are huge. I think that it's, you know, it's, I can see exactly why you were sucked in, and the fact that it's all to do with the judicial system is something that really we need to have something concrete to look at pretty soon, I think, to be able to say, you know, this is, because the answer to a lot of this starts all the way back at education, diagnosis and education. So there are lots of pretty straightforward, inexpensive, free, you know, not cost anything that can be put into place, just this level of understanding that will stop that from happening further down the line.
It's interesting, because like you mentioned earlier, I don't think there's anybody you speak to. For this, I've got an example. Last year, I was privileged to go to a conference on a scholarship at the Cumberland Lodge, where the Royal Estate is located. And we had nearly 40 or close to 50 PhD students from different schools. And I did, you know, give a presentation there. And you could see the look on their faces, like nearly every one of them was almost feeling like, FASD looks like the research we should be doing. Like that sort of, you just see the body language, you could see the reaction. And I don't think, like you said, I've spoken to anybody about this. It's quite an emotive topic. It's quite, I mean, it just draws you in and you can't stop, honestly. I mean, just to also refer back in terms of, you know, some of the vulnerabilities within the prison population, it also struck me. I know FASD wasn't mentioned in this study, but just as an example, I think we had a study carried out, I think, by Botton and colleagues in 2006. And what they did was they tried to assess the prison population to see, you know, percentage was psychologically vulnerable, and they found that at 54%, you know, was the figure they found, as opposed to what the justice system, you know, the justice system only identified 7 to 10% of that same population as being vulnerable. So you can see the gap, 54%, 7%, and I bet you within the 54%, I'm sure FASD would be, you know, very significant in that population. So things like that. Burgeonson did the same studies in the 90s, and, you know, just the same figure, 4% against nearly, you know, 20% he identified. So, and they all claim, they all say that these particular estimates are still conservative estimates because they've not been able to, you know, so it's quite a big issue. It's quite a big topic, honestly.
Yeah, it's a huge topic. And when, you know, just referring back to what Claire said about people touching this system and then just being stuck in a loop over and over again. We all know about FASD and a lot of the very common characteristics of FASD, they're even more vulnerable to getting stuck in that loop, being able to get out of it. Because without a body of very, very, very highly skilled, knowledgeable, expensive professionals fighting for them and being able to prove and identify all of the reasons why they're stuck in that loop, how could they ever get themselves out? You know, if we consider suggestibility and vulnerability and victimization, all the things that we've talked about in previous episodes with Jared Brown, they're all playing into that to keep them like just stuck in this spiral, which is, as you both said, like, it's terrifying. And so this is, you know, this is so positive that this work's being done so that we can highlight all those things that we need to do, really. And it, you know, it ties into my, I've got sucked in with my PhD and my career is now in education and preventing educational disengagement, which is kind of that first step to.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think as well, what I think it's really important to voice is the fact that at no point are any of us suggesting that having FASD is a kind of an excuse or a get out clause for taking part in any kind of criminal activity or for breaking the law in any way. What we are saying is they are such a highly vulnerable group in our society that we are absolutely failing them by not taking care of them properly. And if somebody, you know, I'd always, you know, if somebody at 5 years old was in a horrific car accident and suffered a brain injury, then society would wrap themselves around that person. They would make sure they were able to access whatever education they were able to access. They would be taken care of and their vulnerabilities would be protected.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't, to make sure that they never were in a position where they entered the judicial system. So that's what we're saying. That's what we're saying. We need to go back to the very, very beginning. So because we're just pulling people out of the river now, when it all happened, we need to go right back upstream and see what is making them fall in. And that's where the work needs to be done. And you know, it's never too late to start it. Yeah, we can't change anything about the people who are already entrenched in that system. But then that's everything in society. That's how society evolves, isn't it? When you know better, you do better. And it's pointless looking back and beating ourselves up about how wrong that is, how we've failed everybody. We've just got to think, right, well, we know better now, so let's put everything into doing better now.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's really interesting because if we look at many of the legislations in place now, I will throw my hand up to say, firstly, I'm not a lawyer, but if you look at the legislations in place now, many times when I'm reading some of these documents, like, I'm like screaming out, but this is FASD, this, you know, like, this is relevant to FASD, that, you know, because clearly, for instance, I'll cite, for instance, the Crown Prosecution Guidance for, you know, defense of internity or people with neurodisabilities. It's clearly stated there that any prosecutor, you know, you just have to take into cognizance the nature, the extent, and the impact of any neurodisability or any illness to the crime committed or any defense being presented. Like, it's a legal obligation. And you look at FASD and you think, look, but no one is talking about the nature of FASD. No one is, you know, when it comes to prosecution or criminal, how many, you know, of these professionals really look to say, oh, is FASD involved? What support can we give to these people? And I think that's the basic, that's where it starts from. So many legislations we can talk about in the Pritchard Rule, even the conventions of, you know, the human rights conventions, the articles there, you could see them plainly that, yeah, FASD is really relevant in this. So that's the point, really. That's the point we're driving to, like you said, just creating that awareness to say, well, this exists and we need to look at it as an issue.
Yeah, definitely.
How close are you to, you know, how far are you on with your piece of work? How close are you to getting it finished?
Yeah, so I think in the next few months I should have all my data complete. I've started off with the impulsivity assessments. Thankfully for interrogative suggestibility, we have Professor Gisley Gudjonsson supporting us. Professor Gudjonsson is the one who invented the tool for assessing interrogative suggestibility. And, you know, he has really given us his support in terms of training and, you know, just telling us how the skill works. Because I think for the FASD population, we've got just one study that was carried out by Gudjonsson himself. And I think Dr. Brown too was involved, where they assessed about 7 in prison population. So it's more like we are trying to use it on these young people, on this population, to see, you know, where the differences lie with the neurotypical population. So I think in the next few months, I would say the data should be complete.
Excellent. I really look forward to obviously compiling it all then. Is a different matter, isn't it? It'll get a PhD is no mean feat, is it, Jess?
Yeah.
Oh dear.
Move past my nervous laughter. So when you've been, please do point out if you're not able to share any of this. When you've been interviewing the parents and young people, what have you found any sort of themes at all? Like, even if it's not, you know, your official data, you know, have you had any sort of feelings when you've spoken? Have these parents typically shown themes of, you know, being lost in the system or unsupported? Or do you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, I get your point, Jessica. I mean, just from my end here, while you were saying it, I mean, I've just been thinking through the data on my feet to say, look, it just feels like all across, nearly every single parent you speak to just mentions the same thing. And just the stories are different, the people involved are different, but it's just the same line of stories, you know, the lack of support, the way they are misunderstood by the system, the lack of appropriate interventions, and, you know, just victimization and all of that. So, I mean, it's just the same sort of the thread of theme that runs through all of these interviews. So, yeah, those are the kind of, you know, feelings that come with it at the moment. You can see, you know, where it's all going to. It's just, these people have not met each other, I will say. They are from different parts of the world. And you are interviewing them and you just see similar line of stories, you know, with, and then I think it's really a worthy cause, what term researching and looking into, honestly.
Oh, hang on. That gap was too big. We'll write that down, 35:10. So I think, well, I know for a fact that we will have you back again when you've got things pulled together, when you've got something to share with us, because this is something that we absolutely want to get behind. Like me as a mother, this is something that I won't ever stay quiet about and constantly want to get in front of people, because absolutely nobody wants their child to end up in the judicial system for any reason, even less when your child is so vulnerable. So it's something that I think needs to just be part of our society, that we understand it. And it is all about the understanding, isn't it? It's about getting this information across. You know, this is the science behind it. It's biology. It's not anyone's kind of professional opinion. This is science. This is biology. This Absolutely. Is fact. Yeah. And then what that does is it gives people, well, it changes people's tolerance level onto a whole other platform. And that's really all that it needs to take, that people have an understanding of why something might have happened. It's looked at in a different, you know, instead of punishing somebody for having a brain injury, to want to support them and help them. So I've said it before, and I will continue to say it, that I am so grateful that you're doing this piece of work. It's so needed. And, you know, we will definitely have you back.
Definitely.
When you've got everything together. And
really, you know, those themes that you just highlighted.
Yeah. Are
exactly what I hear every day when I'm trying to address educational disengagement for this population. So I feel like I'm at the front of that process, and you're focusing on a much later stage. But it's the same story. And like Claire said, you know, this work is so needed. We need to address all parts of this pathway, and it's. I think it's something that everybody who is in any way involved or touched by FASD
is
on board with and passionate about, because, you know, this being so vulnerable, this pathway can be a slippery downwards slope, and it's something that collectively that we're all fighting for. And I do feel like there's real, real progress being made. So we are really, really excited to see the publication of your work, and, you know, when you've got results and different things in your analysis written up from part two of your study, and I hope you are hooked long term.
Oh my god, Jessica, don't go there. I think once you're in, you're in. That's the problem. There's no way out. Where do you want to go to in the first place? Where are you going to? You're going nowhere. You're just here. Like it's a project for a lifetime. So
this
is it. Like all of those big FASD conferences that you attend, where people from all around the world are there. Yeah. The guys who found it, like not founded, you can't found FASD, but you know, the guys who first identified FASD still there. That'll be like 50 years from now, we'll still be there. Because there's no getting out.
Absolutely, and you know, like in my own case personally, I would say when I go into interviews with parents, like especially if you're a parent yourself, I've got two girls, like you process the information better because you've got, you know, but like I think in terms of my two little girls, hearing their challenges, hearing what they, and I'm like, look, for every interview I go, it just sort of fuels me to say, look, I've got to do this, I've got to do this. And of course, as you know, the PhD is more like a roller coaster. Sometimes, you know, it comes with challenges. But I mean, the force pushing you, the why you want to do it, just keeps going, you know, taking you there. You need to just keep going because, look, you know, there's really impact to me. Made, you know, this work has the potential to make a difference. I mean, to just put it in the face of the world out there that, look, we need to focus our attention on this. Policymakers need to listen to these parents. And it's just so awful to see, you know, the sort of themes that come up. Parents feeling like, oh, professionals don't want to listen to them, puts them down, ignore them, dismiss them. And well, I just think there's more that we can do to just, I mean, just add more value and, you know, just increase knowledge in this area.
Definitely.
It's perfect. Yeah. Perfect way to end. I think what's been a really interesting conversation. So thank you for giving up your precious time to talk to us about it. And we will be sharing this far and wide. And like we said, we will have you straight back on as soon as it's published and we've got something more to talk about.
Anytime, Claire. Thank you for having me too. Thank you, Jessica. It's been a pleasure. It's been an honor to be here.
Thank you so much for joining us, Gilbert. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We will see you next time. Thank you.